June 27, 1995. A quiet morning in Mason City, Iowa. The sun had barely risen when a local TV station realized their beloved morning anchor, 27-year-old Jody Heusentrut, hadn't shown up for work. Her red Mazda was still parked outside her apartment. Her high heels, hairspray, and car keys were scattered across the lot, as if she'd been snatched mid-routine. There were no screams, no camera footage, no struggle inside, and by the time the clock struck 8 a.m., Jody had vanished, without a single witness to say where she went. Was it a stalker who finally got too close, a secret lover with something to lose, or a perfect abduction that left no forensic trace? This is the story of how a bright television star disappeared into the fog of small-town silence, and how the truth still hides behind decades of whispers. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Last Morning. Mason City, Iowa, June 26, 1995. The Monday night air hung thick with Midwestern humidity. At the Key Apartments, a modest two-story complex near the Winnebago River, Jody Heusentrut was wrapping up an evening phone call. Friends say she was upbeat. She had golfed earlier in the day, was planning her birthday celebration just weeks away, and talked about her job with that same energy she always had. Jody was the face of KMT TV's morning news. A Minnesota native and former Miss Minnesota contestant, she had grown into a bright, confident anchor with aspirations far beyond Iowa. She was known for her poise, polished smile, and an endearing awkwardness when she laughed on camera. Her on-air presence had quickly made her a household name in the region, but her off-air life was more complicated. She had told friends and family about a man who made her feel uncomfortable. She had received letters, phone calls, strange sightings. She had once confided in friends that she felt like someone was following her, but small-town police, and even Jody herself, didn't seem to treat it as a life-threatening concern. That night, she fell asleep watching the movie channel, her favorite way to unwind. She set her alarm for 3 a.m. Like every other weekday, she had to be in the studio before 4:30 a.m., June 27, 1995, 4 East Ot. E.M. Amy Kunz, Jody's colleague at KIMT, began to worry. Jody had not arrived. This wasn't just unusual, it was unheard of. Jody was never late, never. Kunz called Jody's apartment and got no answer. Another call at 4:10 a.m. went straight to voicemail. Finally, around 5:00 a.m., Kunz contacted the police. Officer Jay Uetz of the Mason City Police Department responded. When he arrived at the Key Apartments, Jody's red Mazda Miata was in its usual spot in the parking lot. But something wasn't right. Her shoes, black heels, were lying beside the car. A red blow dryer, a bottle of hairspray, her car keys, a bent car key still lodged in the driver's side lock. These were not things she would have dropped casually. It looked like she had been attacked while unlocking her car. But there was no blood, no obvious signs of a struggle. No one had heard a thing. The items were collected as evidence, but there was an odd calm over the scene. No one had seen or heard Jody since the night before. Her neighbors, mostly young professionals, reported nothing unusual. The complex didn't have security cameras. No one had security systems, and the town wasn't used to crime like this. Small town echoes, the Mason City police quickly opened a missing persons case, treating it with urgency. Friends, co-workers, and volunteers began searching local parks, wooded areas, riversides. Helicopters were dispatched. The FBI was notified, but despite the scale of the operation, no solid clues emerged. Theories began to swirl. Some pointed to a recent golf outing Jody had attended. Was there someone there who had become obsessed with her? Others mentioned John Vansis, a 49-year-old friend of Jody's who had once thrown her a surprise birthday party and often called himself her best friend. He was the last known person to see her alive, allegedly having watched a home video with her the night before. He later passed multiple polygraph tests, but remained a person of interest. There was also speculation about a stalker. Jody had made passing comments about being followed or receiving strange phone calls, but these leads turned cold quickly. The public frenzy within days, the case went national. America's Missing 2020 and Unsolved Mysteries all featured Jody's disappearance. Tips poured in from across the country, but none led to anything actionable. Every phone call led to a dead end. The FBI profiled potential suspects. Criminologists theorized about stalkers with escalating obsession. But without witnesses, security footage, or physical evidence, there was nothing to anchor an arrest. Meanwhile, the town of Mason City began to turn on itself. Everyone knew someone who knew Jody. Rumors started spreading like wildfire. A neighbor's light had been off. Someone saw a van. Someone heard a scream. None of it could be confirmed. Years passed, and with each year, the town became more silent about that summer morning. Unlikely breaks and frustrating leads. In 2005, a tip came in. A man claimed that he and another individual had helped dispose of Jody's body in a nearby river. Authorities searched the area with sonar and dogs, but found nothing. The tip was dismissed as attention-seeking. In 2015, on the 20th anniversary of her disappearance, FindJody.com, a nonprofit run by journalists and former police officers, erected billboards across Iowa. Don't sit in silence. Find Jody. The campaign revived interest, and even former suspects were re-interviewed. But again, no new evidence. In 2020, police served search warrants on Van Cease's GPS devices and properties, suggesting that they hadn't ruled him out even decades later. Yet no charges were filed. By now, over 1,000 persons of interest had been questioned, none arrested. The apartment and the silence today. The key apartments still stand. Jody's old unit is occupied by new tenants who often avoid speaking to the media. The parking lot remains the same size. No security cameras were ever added. And for many, it's as though time froze in that space. The front door Jody exited that morning has become something of a symbol of freedom, routine, and danger hidden in plain sight. The shadow behind the smile. Behind her dazzling on-screen presence, Jody was known to keep her fears private. She hadn't filed restraining orders or reported any specific names. If she knew she was being watched, it was only in passing conversation with trusted friends. Many believe she downplayed her fears, not wanting to seem dramatic or weak. In 1995, stalking wasn't treated with the same seriousness as it is today. If someone was tracking her, waiting, watching, planning, they would have known her routine down to the minute. They would have known where she parked, when she left, that she would be alone in the dark, before sunrise. And that's what haunts the case most. The possibility that her abductor was right there, waiting in the shadows of familiarity. Chapter 2. The Long Silence. Years of leads, lies, and theories. The silence in Mason City wasn't just the absence of noise. It was a wound. As the years passed and the case remained unsolved, Jody Heusentrut's disappearance became less of a news story and more of a shadow that clung to the town's sidewalks, morning broadcasts, and whispered conversations in supermarket aisles. Behind the bright lights of the KIMT news studio, where Jody's empty anchor chair was quickly filled but never emotionally replaced, there lived an unresolved fear that her kidnapper may have lived among them, that the face watching her newscast that final morning might not have been an adoring viewer, but a predator who had been following her for weeks. 1995 and 1998, a community frozen in time. The initial years after Jody vanished saw an influx of investigative energy. The Mason City Police Department, overwhelmed by a case that quickly outgrew their resources, partnered with the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation and the FBI. Tip lines were opened, suspects questioned, polygraphs administered. But the case never produced a solid suspect, and the most basic question, "Where is Jody?" remained unanswered. John Vances, the man who claimed to be her close friend and who had spent time with her the evening before her disappearance, remained in the public spotlight. His story never changed. He last saw her watching a home video of a surprise party he threw her in 1994. The fact that he was 22 years older and apparently obsessed with Jody led many to believe there was more to the story. He volunteered to take multiple polygraph tests, which authorities say he passed. No physical evidence ever tied him to the crime. Still, investigators never cleared him publicly. The phrase, person of interest, seemed to hang over him permanently. Meanwhile, Jody's family was left to grieve, without closure. Her mother, Imogene, passed away in 2014, never knowing what happened to her daughter. Her sister, Joanne Natha, became the family's spokesperson, often speaking out against law enforcement's lack of progress and expressing growing frustration as years melted into decades. The vanishing evidence. From day one, the crime scene had posed problems. The items found near Jody's car, her heels, keys, blow dryer, and hairspray, were collected but not processed with the rigor expected in modern forensic investigations. DNA preservation, fingerprint lifting, and crime scene sealing were not conducted to the extent they would be today. No surveillance footage existed from the apartment complex. No blood, no witnesses, not even a single scream had been heard. Some speculated that she had been forcibly taken by someone she knew, someone whose approach wouldn't raise her alarm. Others believed it was a blitz attack, fast and forceful, executed by someone who had been stalking her routine. But without forensic evidence or eyewitness accounts, police could only chase ghosts. 2003-2010. New tools, old wounds. In the early 2000s, DNA analysis began to transform cold cases. But Jody's case offered little to work with. None of the items found at the scene had yielded foreign DNA of use. Even worse, some crucial pieces of evidence had not been tested until much later. Too late, in some cases, to ensure viable results. Meanwhile, the FindJody.com team, composed of former journalists, private investigators, and retired police officers, stepped in to pressure law enforcement into re-examining the case. They chased leads, interviewed former friends, tracked down former co-workers, and reviewed law enforcement files through FOIA requests. In 2010, they uncovered troubling testimony from a woman who claimed a friend had confessed to killing Jody and dumping her body in a rural area. When police followed up, nothing was found. The woman's statement was dismissed as unreliable, but the fear remained that someone out there had confessed, and no one took it seriously. 2015. The billboard that shook a town. 20 years after the disappearance, the case took a dramatic turn, at least in public interest. On the side of U.S. Highway 122, just a mile from the station where Jody worked, a billboard appeared. It read in bold, haunting letters, "Don't sit in silence. Find Jody." The billboard was funded by FindJody.com. It stood tall, like a scar above the community. It forced people to remember what they'd rather forget. New residents asked old questions. Rumors began circulating again. Was there more to Van Cease's story? What about the neighbor who claimed to see a suspicious van, or the man who said he saw Jody at a gas station days after she vanished? The billboard didn't bring answers, but it brought awareness back. It forced a conversation. 2020. The search warrants and renewed suspicion. In March 2020, the Mason City Police Department confirmed that they had executed a series of search warrants. One was for GPS data linked to a vehicle once owned by John Van Cease. Authorities hoped modern digital tools could provide movement data on the days leading up to and following Jody's disappearance. Another search warrant targeted a group of individuals who had previously been mentioned in connection with the case but were never publicly named. Investigators requested phone records, social media logs, and digital communications. Though the warrants confirmed the case was active, no arrests followed. And once again, the silence returned. Psychological toll on a community in small towns, long unsolved crimes become legends. Jody's case haunted Mason City in a uniquely personal way. She had been their news anchor. Her voice had told them the weather, the time, the feel-good story of the day. Then, suddenly, she became the headline. For law enforcement, the weight of the case grew heavier with each year of failure. Several detectives who worked the case early on had retired, passed away, or become reluctant to speak publicly. Others still on the force carried the burden like a stain on their career. For her colleagues at Chemtee, it was even more painful. Some had worked alongside her, others had trained under her. A few quietly left journalism entirely, citing the emotional trauma of losing a friend and feeling helpless to find her. FindJody.com. Relentless Justice, led by Gary Peterson, Caroline Lowe, and others. The FindJody.com team became Jody's de facto advocates. They conducted interviews, published updates, hosted podcasts, and fielded hundreds of tips each year. In 2022, they released a three-part investigative podcast exploring new leads, including a mysterious man seen near Jody's apartment the night before she vanished. They also investigated tips pointing to sex trafficking rings, disgraced law enforcement officers, and even cold case links to other missing women in the Midwest. Still, none of these leads have been officially confirmed, but they have kept the case alive. Theories and conspiracies. Did a stalker get too close? Theory 1. The obsessed fan. One of the most persistent theories is that Jody was stalked by a fan. Several friends and co-workers reported that Jody had received disturbing letters and phone calls in the months before her disappearance. She mentioned feeling watched. On one occasion, she changed her phone number. Some reports suggest she even began locking her doors more carefully, though this wasn't consistent. It's believed this stalker may have tracked her routine, her 3 a.m. departures, her specific parking spot, her predictable movements. If so, it would explain the precise timing of the attack. But no stalker has ever been identified. And if Jody had written down or reported any names, those notes have never been made public. Theory 2. John Vansis. The friend. Too close. Vansis's role remains controversial. At age 49, he was nearly twice Jody's age and reportedly obsessed with her. He often inserted himself into conversations about her, attended her events, and even admitted to watching a home video of her just hours before she vanished. Some speculate that his feelings for Jody may have gone unreciprocated, and that jealousy or rejection could have motivated a crime of passion. But police have never arrested him. He's passed polygraphs, and no physical evidence links him to the crime. Theory 3. A professional abduction. Some believe the abduction was too clean, too fast, too quiet to be anything other than planned. Could someone have been paid to make her disappear? Jody was a public figure. If she had witnessed or uncovered something sensitive, whether in a relationship, a story she was reporting, or through personal connections, it's not impossible that someone wanted her silenced. But this theory is largely speculative. Theory 4. The van that was never found. Multiple neighbors reported seeing a white van in the parking lot the morning Jody vanished. One said it was parked near her car. Another claimed it wasn't normally in the area. Police searched for a van fitting the description, but never found one. Years later, a tipster claimed the van belonged to a local man who had since moved states. That lead was never confirmed. Theory 5. Trafficking or random violence. A more controversial theory is that Jody may have been taken by someone passing through town, perhaps traffickers or transients. Though less likely given the targeted nature of the attack, some believe it's possible she was selected randomly. This theory is bolstered by a tip that Jody was spotted in a convenience store days later, looking disoriented. That sighting was never verified. The echo that never fades. As of today, Jody Heisentrude has been missing for over 30 years. There is no grave, no conviction, no body, just a woman frozen in time, 27 years old forever. Her image still beams from missing persons flyers, from billboards, and from the memories of those who watched her report the news every morning. Her story isn't just a cold case, it's a mirror reflecting how easily a woman can vanish, even in a small town where everyone knows your name. The silence in Mason City isn't just absence, it's haunting. And for those still searching for answers, One question continues to scream through the quiet. How can someone disappear without a trace?